Good morning and welcome to today's virtual media conference to apprise you of government's efforts to combat COVID-19. Today with me are the Minister of Health, the Honourable Terence Dyal Singh, the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Roshan Parasram, and Dr. Miriam Richards, the Principal Medical Officer, Institutions at the Ministry of Health. The Minister of Health, the Honourable Terence Dyal Singh, will provide an update on COVID-19 in Trinidad and Tobago.
Thank you very much, Minister Cox. Good morning to ladies and gentlemen of the media and all citizens of Trinidad and Tobago, wherever you may be this fine Wednesday morning. So today is Wednesday, 29th of April. The global situation as we stand, coronavirus cases globally, we have reached, as you know, the 3 million mark. 3,161,563. Deaths, 219,287 worldwide. And the number of people recovered to date, 975,673. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what is happening in over 210 countries, territories, and conveyances. And when we say conveyances, we refer to issues like cruise ships. What is the Trinidad and Tobago context as we stand this morning? The total number of tests done to date, 1,642. Total number of unique patient tests, 1,335. Total number of repeated tests, 307. Total number of positive cases remain at 116. Total number of discharges to date, 68. We have had 9 new discharges in the past 24 hours when last we spoke. Total number of deaths remain constant at 8, 7 in Trinidad, 1 in Tobago. And once again, our deepest condolences go out to these families. Total number of patients hospitalized, 9 in Cora. The figure remains 0. All 9 patients are being taken care of at Coover. Thankfully, there is no one in Coover in either an intensive care unit or a high dependency unit or a ventilator. All 9 patients are basically mild, asymptomatic. At the Sangre Grande Center, Brooklyn Center, we have 8 asymptomatic, low-risk, all stable patients. At the Home of Football, we have 23 patients, again, all asymptomatic, low-risk, stable. At our quarantine facility in Tacarigua, where we have the persons who came in from Barbados, I believe last week, Tuesday, we have 33, all seem to be in good health at this point in time. And I think CMO could say they are probably finishing their second week of quarantine. Mm-hmm. So they have a few more days to be quarantined. And as I said before, we know these last few days are going to be the longest days of your life. But we are doing this to protect you and your families, to make sure when you go home into the arms of your loved ones, you are absolutely free from the disease. So just bear with us for a few more days, and then you are back home in the comfort of your home and in the loving arms of your families. At Napa, we have 4 persons. These are all healthcare workers, all negative. They are there as they finish their tour of duty, and they go in to Napa. We are taking care of our healthcare workers. So this is the situational update to Wednesday, 29th April 2020. Minister Cox, back over to you.
Thank you very much, Minister. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Roshan Parasram, will provide us with a clinical update.
Good morning, Honourable Ministers, members of the viewing and listening public. So by way of my clinical update this morning, I just want to give you a figure in terms of the number of community tests we have done so far. We are at 182, which, as you remember, our community testing would have started just under 2 weeks ago. where we started to sample persons from the community outside of the case definition that we were originally using. So that number now stands at 182, all of which came back as negative. By way, I wanted to spend a little time this morning introducing a new concept called the new normal. So in preparation for the phased lifting of restrictions, I think it is imperative that individuals prepare themselves for the continuation and enhancement of the public health measures. It will require that we create a paradigm shift in our behavior to ensure that these infections are kept at bay. The new normal will include 1. The continuation of hand hygiene, including hand washing and the use of sanitizers. 2. Cough etiquette, coughing into the crook of your elbow or using a disposable napkin and discarding. 3. Social distancing where appropriate, example, in lines at banks, in lines at supermarkets. 4. The use of masks where appropriate, as previously discussed. 5. The continued sanitization of surfaces. And most importantly, if you or your child is unwell, you must stay at home, and if required, contact both your employer and the healthcare provider. To this end, the Public Health Inspectorate will be engaged to ensure that all policies and procedures are known and operationalized nationwide. The year 2020 will be written into the pages of history as the year the world stood still, foregoing all other aspirations and focusing on one singular goal: survival. If we do not use the opportunity to adapt, we will allow this courage to take hold again. We have an opportunity to change for the better as individuals, as families, as a nation, and as I dare say, the world. To adapt, to survive, we must conform to the new normal. Thank you, Minister Cox.
Thank you very much, Dr. Parasaram. But before we go to our next speaker, here's a look at one of the additional facilities prepared to accommodate COVID-19 patients and to quarantine persons when the need arises.
The government of Trinidad and Tobago continues to proactively prepare additional facilities which provide accommodation for COVID-19 patients. In a national response to the COVID-19 pandemic, the National Racquet Sports Center, located in Tacarigua, is accommodating 33 nationals returning from Barbados. However, this facility will be further used for any other group of citizens that may be required to be quarantined. The isolated site is suitable to house 48 persons and the necessary trained medical staff and support staff. This alternative care facility is outfitted with 48 privately screened beds, along with bathroom and toilet amenities. There are two common areas with Wi-Fi and cable televisions that offer seating at a social distance. Additional seating is provided in two kitchenettes furnished with microwaves, refrigerators, electric kettles, water coolers, and tea stations to provide some sort of normalcy as persons transition back to their daily lives. There is also a designated laundry area equipped with washing machines and dryers. Persons also have access to an outdoor space for recreation. The National Racquet Sports Center is enclosed and is being secured by the Trinidad and Tobago Defense Force, along with volunteers from the Trinidad and Tobago Red Cross Society. All measures were put in place to ensure that the best service possible is offered to persons in the facility and that there was no risk to the community.
This was a production of the Ministry of Communications.
Dr. Mariam Richards, the Principal Medical Officer, Institutions at the Ministry of Health, will now speak on preparations of those parallel health facilities for COVID-19. Dr. Richards.
Good morning, viewers. The Ministry of Health has instituted a parallel healthcare system as the health sector's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The parallel healthcare system represents a proactive and evidence-based approach to providing specialized care for persons with COVID-19 through a complementary system that is designed specifically to manage persons diagnosed with this disease. This system ensures that the rest of the population has continued care at existing healthcare facilities in our nation's hospitals. The Kuva Medical and Multi-Training Facility In combination with a series of other retrofitted health facilities, hospitals and step-down facilities are currently being utilized to operationalize this system. The parallel healthcare system commenced on March 12, 2020, when the first COVID-19 case was admitted to the isolation ward at the Cora Hospital. Since then, the parallel healthcare system has evolved to 922 beds distributed across 12 facilities offering four levels of care in Trinidad and Tobago. 75 of these beds currently exist in Tobago. Levels of care by facility are as follows. Severe and critical patients will be housed at the Coover Medical and Multi-Training Facility and the Augustus Long Hospital. Intermediate level care patients can be housed at the Cora Hospital, the Princess Elizabeth Home, Scarborough General Hospital and the Arima General Hospital. A step-down facility at the Home of Football Coover and at the Sandy Grandy Center would be in place for patients who require care after being hospitalized and to be reintegrated back into their homes. Quarantine facilities for staff members and returning nationals are in place at the Takarigua Center, UE St. Augustine Debe Campus at UE St. Augustine Campus at Debe Pinal and at Balandra. The decision on how bed spaces were allocated for patients was modeled based on international studies, which indicate that 5% of COVID-19 patients require intensive care unit support, 15% high dependency level care, and the remaining 80% ward or ambulatory level care. The reorganization of the healthcare system to adequately respond to the pandemic is an essential task that requires the expansion of emergency and hospital services across the country. The establishment of this parallel system promoted a coordinated and systematic approach that is crucial to the effective method of containing the virus while ensuring that the population is protected and receives care for all other conditions. The benefits of this system include a decreased burden on the healthcare system. Establishing a healthcare system that is prioritized to handle COVID-19 related cases lessens the burden on the traditional healthcare system. It means that patients who are attending our nation's hospitals continue to receive care without that system being overwhelmed. The distribution of COVID-19 case responsibilities ensures that the public has continued access to care through the traditional system, while the parallel system manages the COVID-19 cases. Reduced transmission of disease. The facilities designated to COVID-19 responses provide a safeguard against virus transmission to other ill individuals by separating persons confirmed and suspected of COVID-19 from those who may be susceptible. Facilities have been designed and retrofitted based on World Health Organization standards. Reducing resource shortages. Having a centralized COVID-19 response system, as in our parallel healthcare system, ensures that medical resources such as medical equipment, personal protective equipment, and staff are effectively and equitably allocated throughout the system to where they are most needed. Standardization of care. A centralized system ensures standardized health policy, health care quality, services, and managerial capabilities, allowing for a learning process that allows for continuous service improvement. The approaches undertaken by other countries in their method during this pandemic offered insights to the Ministry of Health into the potential benefits and necessity of the parallel healthcare system. The parallel healthcare system continues to be a proactive and vital approach to managing future impending waves of this pandemic. While the system is managed primarily by the Ministry of Health, it is imperative to recognize the support provided by the Ministry of National Security, especially through the Trinidad and Tobago Defense Force and Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, as well as the Ministries of Communication, Public Utilities, and Local Government. Our parallel health system also demonstrated an excellent partnership model between multilateral agencies such as PAHO, the CAFA UNDP, the Inter-American Development Bank, CAF, private sector and diplomatic missions, and embassies who have assisted us in technical cooperation and resource mobilization. Without an available vaccine, COVID-19 remains an evident and present danger to our population. As the number of imported cases tends to diminish, the risk of sporadic cases, which are inevitably linked to community spread, rises. The World Health Organization recognizes and recommends designated specific hospitals through a parallel healthcare system to receive COVID-19 patients as a strategy to strengthen our nation's health system's response. The parallel healthcare system therefore presents itself as a best practice for this country based on its current ability to respond and to reduce the threat of the COVID-19 virus.
Okay, thank you very much. Members of the media, the floor is now open. Remember to identify yourself and the media house you represent before posing your question. Remember that we want to give as many of you an opportunity to post questions to us, but that means in our limited time, we will have to give each media house a chance to get a maximum of 2 questions in. Once we have completed the poll and time allows, I will come back to you. Let us keep this in mind as we begin taking your questions. CNC3.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
Esther Sambrano, CNC3.
Yes, sir.
Okay, to Minister Dyal Singh, you spoke about 5 labs yesterday that would have applied for approval to do testing. Can you confirm whether they have been denied or is the approval still pending?
So the chief medical officer. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right. And the other one to the chief medical officer, you mentioned the new normal. Could you say whether when these stay-at-home restrictions are lifted, is there a possibility that we could still see some regulations in place, like social distancing, etc.?
Okay, so let me take the last question on regulations. The regulations will reflect the best evidence at the time. We cannot predict what the new regulations will be, but expect a new normal. And I'm hoping that people will not depend on regulations and the force of law to simply do what is correct. That is, wash your hands. You can't pass a law again for that. Don't touch your face. Can't pass a law against that. How to cough. How to wear a mask. So the regulations in the future will reflect what this new normal is going to be, and we will look at best evidence globally. I will now hand you over to the chief medical officer to answer his part of the question.
Right. So no one has been rejected out of the labs that have submitted applications to the Ministry of Health. We are in the process of actually conducting during the course of this week some site visits with a team that we put together, which includes a medical lab technician as well as quality control specialists. So they are visiting this week all the institutions. They are supposed to give me a report at the end of their visits to tell me what type of machines they are using, what type of tests they are doing, the type of staff that are operating the machines, if they have been accredited for other tests prior as a lab. So that information will come to me. I will collaboratively look at it together with CAFA and PAHO, and then we will be communicating to the labs one-on-one.
Thank you, Dr. Parasram. 98.1.
Good morning, ministers. Stephen Cummings, 98.1.
Morning, FM. Sir.
Two questions quickly, one for Dr. Parasram and the other for Mr. Dyal Singh. Dr. Parasram, you mentioned 182 community testing exercises which were done. I'm wondering if you have any, apart from that or within that 182, if there were any persons who were retested. Mr. Dyal Singh. Mr. Dyal Singh, I want to sort of, you know, press further on that question that was posed earlier by my colleague. Mm-hmm. Does this mean the government may have to return to Parliament to enact pieces of legislation for implementing some of this, what we call the new normal, in reference to measures mentioned by Dr. Parasram?
Okay. CMO, you want to go first?
So just in terms of the first question, the answer is no. There wouldn't be any repeats in those, because the repeats are usually coming from patients that are already positive. So these are community cases that are strictly out of that realm. So the answer is no.
Right. So to take the second part of your question, if we have to return to Parliament, the regulations that apply do not have legal force under the Public Health Ordinance. We have passed about 12 sets of regulations. They don't have to go to Parliament. What gives the Minister of Health the authority lies in its parent legislation, the Public Health Ordinance of 1915, and under that we can pass these regulations. So we don't need to go to Parliament to pass a regulation to wash hands. We don't have to go to Parliament to pass a regulation at how to cough into the crook of your elbow. The new normal that the CMO is speaking about, and all persons across the world, is how societies have to adapt to the virus. because the virus isn't going to adapt to us. If there's a need to go to Parliament, the Honourable Attorney General will certainly make that recommendation for anything that requires parliamentary scrutiny, debate, and legislative effect. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Astronaut Health News.
Bernard Stewart, Astronaut Health Newspaper. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm particularly concerned with the social distancing and use of masks aspect of the new normal, which Dr. Parasram spoke about. And I want to know, for how long after restrictions are lifted do you estimate the new normal to be necessary? And also, do we see returning nationals or incoming foreigners from now on having to be placed in quarantine, perhaps as part of the new normal?
Okay. So I can't put a time on it, to be honest. And COVID-19 is only one new disease that we are seeing. We expect as a world to be seeing various forms of viruses and other things occurring over the next few years. As we have seen, when we look back over the last decade or so, we have seen a number of new viruses take root in the populations. So we expect that this trend may continue in the future beyond COVID-19. But a milestone for COVID-19, of course, will be looking at a vaccine in the future. If there's specific treatment, those things will help us greatly in terms of fighting this disease. So we can look towards those as milestones if you want. But the new normal, I mean, in terms of wearing masks, for instance, I have seen one airline trying to get up and running, and what they have insisted on is that everyone who comes onto the plane wear a mask during flight. So mandatory wearing of masks on an aircraft may be something that is new. And as the policies and procedures are rolled out, we would expect various formats to take place for different places. For instance, supermarkets, workplaces, they will have to have different alterations in the procedures. I am asking that my principal medical officer of environmental health, together with the public health inspectorate, lead that progression from policy to operationalization in the quickest possible time so everyone understands what is the new normal.
Gwyneth, let me just come in here on the new normal, because I'm glad you raised it. The new normal is not only about passing laws. The new normal is what do we do at the individual level to save our own lives. And let me give you an example and ask you a question. Would you go back to shaking hands? Would you go back to hugging and kissing people that you meet on the street socially? The new normal is going to demand of us, that we no longer shake hands in the future. We're not going to pass a law against that. It's going to be strongly recommended. The new normal is you can't have, you are seeing sporting organizations talking about starting back their sporting seasons without crowds and just for television only events. That is going to be the new normal, because all these practices are geared simply to interrupt the transmission of the virus from person to person. So I hope that further clarifies what this new normal is going to look like in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Just want to remind you all that we have Dr. Miriam Richards, and if you want information on the parallel health facilities that were provided for COVID-19 patients and those requiring quarantine, please pose questions to her. Express.
Good morning, Camille Hunt, Express.
Morning.
Minister, I'm not sure if this was spoken about already, but there's this document from the University of Oxford. It's dated April 23rd and rates countries on their preparedness to roll back their lockdowns. Trinidad and Tobago is ranked as the second most prepared country in the world. And also, the World Health Organization has outlined 6 criteria that countries should meet before they relax their social distancing measures. So I'm wondering, what do you think of Trinidad and Tobago being ranked as second most prepared? And how do you believe we measure up against the WHO's criteria? And if I can just squeeze in one last question, if you have any thoughts on the drug remdesivir.
Okay.
I see the phase 3 trial results were announced today.
two questions, please. And once we have the time, we will get back to you. So we'll take the first two questions. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I will try to answer your questions. I am glad that the that University of Oxford put out this, because it, and I have a copy here, because there has been so much misinformation about testing, why we isolated and so on. So let me give you the parameters under which Trinidad and Tobago ranked second. Cases control, you rank second. Ability to test, trace and isolate, we scored very well. How we manage imported cases, outstanding. Community understanding, excellent. That is testimony to what we have been seeing all along, that our response to COVID, led by the Prime Minister, was a robust one, and we will only get this type of recognition outside of Trinidad and Tobago. What this speaks to is that the world is recognizing that the decision not to flip a switch and just open back your economy is the correct way. The Honourable Prime Minister has said he will be led by the science and by the data, and the decision will be made as to what parts of the economy to open up with the sole objective of saving lives. So the Oxford University report is a very good report. It paints us in an excellent light, and I'm happy that you raised it. The issue of the drug remdesivir, that is being looked at by a committee that the chief medical officer has set up with the University of the West Indies, and they look at all the so-called magic bullets, whether it's hydroxychloroquine, which has failed spectacularly, whether interferon, which came out some a month ago, and we will not unleash onto the population any drug that hasn't been proven to be either safe and or effective. So I hope that answers your questions, and thank you for them.
I think Dr. Parasram?
No.
Okay. All right. We move to Loop Titi.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Siola Bilexe from Loop Titi.
Morning.
I just wanted to find out, bearing in mind that there is no confirmed treatment just yet for COVID-19, given that we have quite a number of patients who've now recovered from the virus, are we considering or exploring a treatment like plasma treatment, for example, or seeking donations from these patients? Blood donation, sorry.
Yes, so the university has been asked to look at, as Minister alluded to, the treatment options that are available. I know other countries have started that work, but it requires in our setting that we do it in a formal way through some sort of survey or actual testing, which we will discuss with the University of the West Indies to ensure that it is being explored, but it has to be in a formal way where there's ethical approval prior to proceeding, because it is a rather invasive sort of approach. So we will be exploring that with the immunologists as well as UWE to see if that is there's a possibility of doing that here in Trinidad. We are a smaller setting, so you have to appreciate that larger countries have the ability to deal with complications of those kinds of studies in a much better way, generally speaking. So we have to make sure we have ethical approval. We have to make sure we have everything in order before we can go that step.
Thank you, Doctor. TV6.
Hi, morning everyone. Urvashi from TV6.
Morning.
Minister Dialsing, I'd like to pose a question to you first. Sure. When I get the answer, I'd like to pose another to the CMO. Yesterday you spoke about 4,000 test kits subject of some form of a trade restriction. But my understanding would be that this 4,000 would be in addition to the 10,000 that we ordered from China, and also in addition to the 4,000 donated. I also get the impression that it came from a different supplier. Is it possible that you bring us up to speed on the country stock and any possible orders in place?
Sure. Thank you very much. So we are getting test kits from three major sources: China, through PAHO, and through another company. As I mentioned yesterday, the company is Abbott. The new machines that we brought in before coronavirus were Abbott machines. We got caught up with the trade embargo, so we couldn't get the Abbott test kits to run on the Abbott machines, right? We have since been able to source 4,000 Abbott test kits to run on the Abbott machines. In addition to that, we are getting in other test kits through PAHO. I can't give you the brand. And we are also getting in about 10,000 CMO. Is it 10 or 15?
Yeah, 10, I think.
10,000 from China. They are packed and ready to go. They just have to clear final shipping scrutiny by the authorities in China. Then they go to Hong Kong. Then they go to somewhere else. And then they reach here. Right now, we have more than enough test kits between CARFA, and we have 1,750 extraction kits, which we sourced, to use the 4,000 Chinese kits that we got maybe about a month ago. So right now, we're in a very good place with both test kits, extraction kits, amplification kits, swabs, because you can have all the test kits in the world. If you don't have swabs, you can't test anybody. So it's not only test kits. It's test kits, extraction kits, amplification kits, swabs, machines, people, policies, procedures. So right now, we're in a pretty good place. And as things ease up, you'll be getting more and more test kits. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. You have another question? TV6?
Thank you. I do have a follow-up question, and this one will be for the CMO. Now, we're talking about, the conversation seems to have moved to the easing up of restrictions, but of course the WHO has warned of a rise in cases. Anytime any sort of restrictions are eased up, despite your standing, despite how good you are at reducing the spread. Of course, we're seeing what happened in China, and now we're seeing what happened in Germany. It is recommended that countries have an aggressive testing and tracing programs. CMO, I'm asking if you are confident that we have this in place, or at least within the next 2 weeks, this will be in place, given our capacity to run tests, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so within the next 2 weeks, and even now, what we will be doing once we start to release the restrictions, and as you rightly said, we have to test, and we have to probably increase the amount of testing that we're doing. So as people start to move, the virus will tend to move with them if there's a nidus of community spread. So we have to increase our testing, increase our vigilance, but we have, as I said, we need to increase our public health measures and our individual awareness so that we keep the numbers down. So we anticipate as people start to move, if there's a focus somewhere in the community, that focus will start to move with the persons. So adhere to the public health measures as I have outlined before, even more so. We will increase our testing to see if we can pick up anything in the first instance. But I think that's what it has to be done on a phased basis, with increased testing, increased public health measures to pick up any spikes that may occur. And if they do occur, of course, we take the necessary actions then.
Let me just support the CMO and come in here. The issue of testing is one that, in my view, has been misinterpreted. When Dr. Tedros spoke about test, and I played the clip here 2 weeks ago, and everybody forgets that part of the clip. He says, test, all suspected cases and isolate them. He never said, go out into the community and test a whole series of asymptomatic people. And I think that's where the conversation gets convoluted. It is never the intention of any country, and some countries did it, to simply go out there and test asymptomatic people. What that does, Urvashi, it gives you a false sense of security. Because when you go out and test well asymptomatic people at the onset with no travel history, no direct contact, of course they're going to be negative. And it lulls that country into a false sense of security. What you are seeing now, and I'm not going to call any country's name, countries that did that approach and were then held up as the gold standard as how to test have now regretted that policy of testing asymptomatic people. We stood by our policy and we took the blows for it, that we will test all symptomatic persons in the first instance with a travel history, their primary contacts, their secondary contacts. And now we have widened it into the community testing. So I hope the conversation about what test means is, he said, test, and I don't know if we could play that clip again. I'll give them some time to maybe cue it up. Dr. Tedros said, test, all symptomatic people with a travel history, and when you test them, you isolate them. I don't know if that clip could be played again sometime during this morning. So, Urvashi, I hope that answers your question.
So, this is a question to the CMO. Mm-hmm. Seeing that we're talking about testing, I've pulled this question from online. Someone wants to know if you can expand on exactly how posthumous testing is done.
Okay. All right. So there seem to be some misunderstanding of what we mean by posthumous. Someone has died in a community setting, meaning not in the hospital. A sample is taken from that individual. This is not an autopsy sample. We maintain the... You have to... From the beginning, we have said our protocol as it relates to dealing with persons that have died from COVID. We are not going to do an autopsy on those persons. So this is a sample that someone has died, not of COVID, is not a COVID positive person, in the community, outside of the hospital, where the cause of death is unknown. A sample is taken from that person using usually a swab, and that is sent to the Trinidad Public Health Lab, just like any other person that is alive. So that is the way the posthumous testing is done. It is not that it's different from our decision. So let us be clear that our decision to not do autopsies are only limited to those persons that have tested positive for COVID. So the persons that have tested positive, there will be no autopsies done on those individuals. But persons with unknown causes of death from the community, we will continue to do sampling from those individuals.
Thank you very much. We move to Newsday.
Hi, morning. Panchantak of Newsday.
Good morning.
Hello, you hear me?
Yes, we are
morning,
hearing
you. Hear me?
Yes, we are.
Okay, good. The questions I wanted to ask, and this is for any member of the head table who can answer them. The first one is sticking with the new normal that was talked about. What has been the discussion with stakeholders in terms of buy-in? Because obviously when we're talking about these regulations, things, say, opening up something like a restaurant might be one thing, but say staging a fete in another thing is another thing. So you might require different regulations across the board. So I want to know what's the buy-in from stakeholders, and if there's an understanding that they will need, that certain practices will have to change, as the first thing. The other thing I wanted to ask is in respect of the nationals from Suriname who are supposed to be coming in at the end of the week, is there any information as to whether they've been tested in Suriname, preparations for them to be tested when they get here, and where will they be housed?
Okay, so I'll take the first part of the question because that falls in my garden as a policymaker. So Minister Lehunt, who is on that committee that the Honorable Prime Minister has set up, reached out to me last week to advise on just that, Clint. And we have put together a team of a lot of OSH people. We are working with the Chambers of Commerce, Manufacturers Association, the restaurant industry, to work collaboratively with them to come up with new practices as the Prime Minister deems it is ready, he is ready to open up certain parts of the economy. So that work has been going on behind the scenes about a week now, and we will send our submissions to Minister Lehunt. I think we have Dr. the Richards. Clip.
Yeah, hold on.
You want to CMO? Yeah, that CMO go first, no, and then we go to the
Dr. Richards can take the second part.
Okay. Dr. Richards, you can take the second part of this.
Would you mind just repeating the second part, please?
Yeah. Of the Suriname.
Could you repeat your question, please?
Regarding the Surinamese?
Regarding the Surinamese, it was a two-part question, and that was firstly, have they been tested over there in Suriname? preparations for them to be tested when they get here, and where will they be housed when they're here for the period of quarantine?
Okay, thank you. The Ministry of Health plans to house the Trinidadians who are based in Suriname at the UE St. Augustine Debe Pinal campus. That facility can house up to 72 persons in individual rooms. I visited the facility yesterday, and all was in place to ensure that the Trinidadians that are returning will be comfortable and would receive the appropriate levels of care. In terms of testing, I am unaware if testing was done in Suriname, but what I can say is that we have already made arrangements to have all persons swabbed when they return to Trinidad and Tobago. In order for them to have a very efficient swabbing process, we've actually set up a swab team with primary care physicians from the SWRHA, and we've already identified and located swabs to ensure that all persons will be tested as they arrive. Thank you.
Okay, I think I was just informed that they have the clip that the minister spoke about just now. Could we put it up, please?
We have a simple message for all countries. Test, test, test. Test every suspected case. If they if they test positive, isolate them and find out who they have been in close contact with up to 2 days before they developed symptoms, and test those people too.
Okay, so I really hope that Dr. Tetris's words that you see now in the full context, and this is what University of Oxford has ranked us second in. Cases control and our ability to test, trace and isolate. It makes no sense to go out into the community and test asymptomatic people. All you do is waste resources, you get a set of negative tests, and that country is lulled into a false sense of security. We avoided that. And we came to you and we took blows for it for a month, sticking by this protocol where we test, test, test all suspected cases, contacts, and we isolate them. And I think that approach is why we are now ranked second by Oxford University. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I go back to 98.1. One question, please.
Yes, good morning again. Thank you for the opportunity. Dr. Richards, do you think that we have, as a country, the institutional capacity to carry this very same parallel system, healthcare system that we've been talking about, in the context of specialists and persons who are specifically trained in specific areas? Because as a country, we've always had shortages in terms of specialists. We've had over the many years to import and invite persons from Cuba and other parts of the country. This parallel system that we are talking about, do you think that we would have the institutional capacity to carry this forward post COVID-19?
Who's going to take that?
Okay. That's an excellent question. Thank you. Yes, I believe that we do have the institutional capacity to carry this parallel system for as long as we need to. We have been receiving assistance from other agencies, for example, through the Inter-American Development Bank. We recently received funding to hire 100 physicians and 100 nurses. We also received 50 nurses through the UNDP program, and we have 9 Cuban nurses that should be arriving in Trinidad very soon, apparently this week. In terms of the training at the specialist level, the COVID-19 disease or the COVID-19 virus really requires specialist care from intensive care specialists and internal medicine or critical care specialists. And through capacity building and the assistance of agencies such as PAHO, CAF, and even the foreign embassies and diplomatic missions, we have been upscaling our capacity in terms of our physicians to treat this disease. It's an ongoing and iterative process, but it's one that we have been managing. And so I think we do have the capacity to continue with it.
If I just want to add to the specialist capacity, as Dr. Richard said, we're dealing with mainly intensivists, which are anesthetic physicians. The University of the West Indies actually has a DM program in that specialty. So we are able to train our specialists in Trinidad. So that is ongoing. And our specialists are of a world-class standard in that right, in their own right. So, as she said, the specialties that we have seen over the years are subspecialties for various things. For instance, cardio, thoracic surgeons, and you have seen Dr. West on, as well as his team. He has mentioned his team. So I think we are adequately placed in the way of specialists to deal with COVID-19 in Trinidad and Tobago.
Okay, we have another question. One question from Astronaut Health News.
Yes, Gwyneth Stewart's from Astronaut again. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Richards, for your report. And do we not deem it necessary to include serious or severe respiratory illnesses such as H1N1 under the parallel healthcare system? And if not, why not?
So Gwyneth, yeah. So basically, post-COVID, the parallel system that we have built will actually help us deal with a lot of infectious disease that we have not been dealing with in a parallel sort of way. We can keep it up and running even beyond COVID to use for things like H1N1, as you mentioned, and other infectious diseases, which will actually augur well in terms of maintaining the integrity of the regular healthcare system, if you want to call it regular, beyond the parallel. So it's a very good suggestion, and it's something that we took on board to consider keeping that infectious disease parallel sort of system going even way beyond COVID.
Let me just come in here from a policy perspective, Gwyneth. A distinction needs to be made between H1N1 and COVID. Mm-hmm. And that big distinction is H1N1, we have a vaccine. Mm-hmm. So what hampers us in Trinidad and Tobago and globally is the anti-vaxxers movement. Those doctors, and we have them in Trinidad and Tobago, who get airtime to talk and discourage the population from going for the H1N1 vaccine, who tell the country that there's this global discussion about the dangers of H1N1 for pregnant people and children when there's none. Our biggest problem with H1N1 is not administering the vaccine, is getting people to stop listening to the anti-vaxxers, both in Trinidad and globally, who discourage people from getting the vaccine. That is the biggest problem we face at the Ministry of Health. And 41 people in Trinidad have died in this year's flu season. And who died again? Mainly the elderly. So the message going forward with H1N1 on the parallel healthcare system is that every flu season, we beg people, come and get vaccinated. It could save your life. And now, as we prepare for the next flu season, because this one is coming to an end, if people don't get vaccinated against H1N1, the elderly, and the chief medical officer could back me up here, you will now be battling two viruses at the same time. H1N1, which can kill you, COVID, which can kill you. But you can protect yourself against H1N1 with a vaccine. So instead of battling two viruses at the same time and literally ensuring that you have a negative outcome, you could significantly enhance your chances of surviving these two viruses by being vaccinated for at least one until a vaccine becomes available for the second one. Mm-hmm. CMO?
Correct. So, and by way of vaccination, this year we had just over 112,000 people vaccinated for H1N1. We still have a stock of approximately 40, just over 40,000 remaining. So we are encouraging people for the remainder of the season to continue vaccination.
CMO, while you're at it, on Facebook, there still seems to be some persons not clear on a directive to wear masks.
Okay.
And they want some clarification.
Okay. So, as we discussed before, wearing a mask for the general population, we're looking at wearing a mask predominantly when you're going. We had said before to wear a mask once you're going out. There are times that you need to wear a mask when you're actually in your house as well, and we have described that in our communication material, meaning if you have an individual that is ill within your home, you should wear a mask, or someone that is at high risk, a high-risk member of a population, for instance, the elderly or somebody with non-communicable disease, that we live in a congested setting, we may consider, and there are persons leaving and coming from that household, consider using a mask even in that setting. But as you leave your home for the general population, we expect that a mask should be worn at this time.
Thank you very much. One question from TV6.
Just to get an update from the CMO. CMO, is there any update on the solidarity trials and our efforts to do?
Yes. So I have been collaborating with the University of the West Indies. They have to submit a proposal through their principal investigator to the Ministry of Health Ethics Committee. I am awaiting that. That should be coming during the course of the week. I have heard from them. I think Professor Simongal will be on the press conference later in the week to discuss the solidarity trial in more detail as well.
Before the CMO leaves that solidarity trial, somebody had asked earlier about remdesivir, right? Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah.
Let me just give you a little background into what happens. And this is why, members of the media, we have to be careful how we latch on to international blurbs. The reason that drug came to the public's attention was that the manufacturer of the drug leaked, deliberately so, a report which was never peer-reviewed, that was not based on any clinical trials, and leaked it to a particular website. The website then took that complimentary report, which was not peer-reviewed, which had little or no scientific basis, and spread that globally. And it was picked up by media houses globally. What happened? The stock price of that company shot up. People made money. The lesson that we have to learn, and as media practitioners, is that we always have to have a fair degree of skepticism when we are reporting on these so-called miracle cures. Right now, there is no miracle cure. There is no silver bullet. There is no vaccine. There is no standard treatment. What we can do to save lives are the social measures that the CMO is talking about. We have to continue to make it part of our culture to wash hands every hour. Don't touch your face. If you are sick from now on, don't go to work. Don't send that sick child to school because you don't know what they have. It's going to put an added burden on us as parents, as individuals. Social distances is going to become the norm. That is how we have to adapt to the virus, because the virus isn't going to adapt to us. And as we move forward, as I keep saying, so far, so good. Your healthcare system has stood up to the challenge. There is one country that a person died in an ambulance after being turned away by 79 hospitals because they were crowded. We don't have that here. Let us not take these gains for granted and fritter them away by acting irresponsibly. We will beat this together and we will save lives as we move forward. So far, so good.
Thank you very much, Minister. Newsday, one question, please.
Yes, hello?
Yes, we are hearing you.
Hi. What I wanted to ask is, Minister Dayal Singh, what is your understanding of the Common Health Protocol which was recently agreed to by CARICOM leaders, and how exactly is that supposed to help us on all fronts in terms of treating with this virus?
Okay, thank you. So there would have been several meetings with CARICOM health ministers. At the end of the day, we agree wholeheartedly that we face a definite threat to our way of life in CARICOM. As the Honourable Prime Minister would have said on Saturday, remember, some countries depend solely on tourism. At the end of the day, each country has to take steps to protect its population. There are some common threads that go through all these discussions. That is the social distancing, the hygiene methods. Different countries, based on their risk profile, will have different ways of treating with border closures, different ways of treating with what they allow in and out. Trinidad and Tobago's position is that we will take all necessary steps to save lives and protect the society of Trinidad and Tobago. And so far, so good. But we agreed at a CARICOM level that we have to develop our own health protocols because of the absence of a vaccine. So that is what we have discussed. That is what we have done. And I hope that answers your question.
Okay. So I-95.5 hands went up late. One question, please.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Whitfield Tunas on I-95.5. This is a logistical question. We are currently just over a month out from the start of the rainy season, and more importantly, hurricane season that, based on all reports, is supposed to be above average in terms of activity. Has any consideration been given to how this would impact, especially the parallel healthcare system going forward, in terms of moving around patients and equipment and personnel and so forth? And are we looking at putting things in place to cater to that?
Yeah, so the parallel healthcare system actually gives us some redundancy that we would not have had before when dealing with these kinds of disasters. So that is, it gives us an added degree of support as a country that we can rely on if we have disasters of that nature taking place. Right now, actually, I have the Chief Disaster Preparedness Officer from the Ministry of Health attending a meeting with the ODPM and other stakeholders to look at the disaster plans as it relates to hurricanes. And she has actually also had a symposium on Sunday with the University of the West Indies detailing how our response would be to hurricanes and other natural disasters during the time of COVID. So we are well aware that there would need to be some tailoring of the response, especially with infectious diseases of this nature around, and we have taken all factors into consideration at this point.
From a policy perspective, you may remember that I mentioned about a month ago when I took some notes to Cabinet to respond to COVID, one of the notes was to put into Trinidad and Tobago for the very first time a graded response to national disasters. So at the Ministry, we now have a policy position approved by Cabinet, which gives you a grade 1, a grade 2, and a grade 3 response for natural disasters, whether they are earthquakes, hurricanes, COVID, Ebola, and that will drive the logistical response. So now we have a Cabinet response driving the logistical response.
Thank you. I would now like to ask the Minister of Health to give us a closing statement, please.
Thank you very much, Minister Cox, and thank you to ladies and gentlemen of the media this morning for giving us once again the opportunity to converse with you. Friends, and I think I can safely say friends now, we are coming to a very critical stage in our response to COVID-19. So far, so good. Don't let this Oxford report lull us into a false sense of security. I beg of the national community. We have to be vigilant. We have to maintain our vigilance. And I'll tell you why. We have to learn from other countries where the second wave was worse than the first wave. We managed our first wave well. When you take away the cruise ship component from our cases, CMO, I think we have about 116 minus 52, correct?
64.
We have 64 cases outside of the cruise ship component. As we ramp up our community testing, so far, so good.
182
cases so far, all negative. We are going to deepen our community set testing. And let me explain what that means policy-wise. Because again, the same way Dr. Tedros's words were misinterpreted, random testing does not mean you randomly select every third person on Frederick Street or in Scarborough. Randomness means you have a case definition, fever, whatever, expanded outside of travel or being in contact with some person of COVID. That is the expanded case definition. Once you fit in that, then we will randomly sample people within that. So, how does it work? At the health centers, every third person, for example, who comes into the health center on accident and emergency with a fever, with a runny nose, with the loss of sense of taste and smell, they will be randomly tested. We are not going to be randomly testing well people, because countries that did that got a false sense of security. All those tests come back negative. That is a policy prescription moving forward with random testing. I hope this clarifies what random testing is. It means randomly testing people with flu-like symptoms, but outside of a high suspicion of COVID. That is, they have had no travel history, they were not in contact with somebody with COVID. And that will give us an excellent baseline to judge whether we have community spread. So far, we have the 182 cases, all negative. So far, so good. So as we seek to get the populations buy into this randomness now, we will continue to partner. And I want to thank the media for carrying our news every day. And once we stick to the protocols that we have set out, we will get through this together, and we'll come out of this and see some more light at the end of the tunnel.